Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
The book of Genesis in the Bible displays the discussion between God and Abraham concerning the land that God would give to Abraham and his descendants as an inheritance. The division of the lands are found in many historical maps showing that the land divided among the 12 sons of Jacob and later becoming the kingdom of Israel under King David. While the conversations today concerning the land of Israel are quite different between biblical scholars, secular media, and global politicians, historical documents do speak for themselves. To add a Jewish perspective to traditional Christian understanding, Kevin Howard asked Rabbi Yehuda Glick, the founder of Shalom Jerusalem Foundation, to speak at this year's Christian Friends of Israel Conference in Jerusalem. We'll bring you that interesting message in just a moment, but first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. The leader of the Yamina party, Ayelet Shaked, calls on the Israeli government and the Western world to support the establishment of an independent Kurdistan, saying in a statement, "A short time ago, Yom Kippur ended, a day of introspection. 46 years ago today, a war broke out in which we were able to defeat an enemy who sought to destroy us, thanks to the great valor and dedication of our IDF soldiers. Our national memory requires us to revolt against violence directed against another nation. Such is the Turkish violence directed against the Kurdish people in northern Syria." She said, "I have said this in the past. It is in the interest of both Israel and the United States for the security and stability of the region that a Kurdish state be established. The Western world should stand with them," she concluded. Before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On October 11, 1881, Eliezer ben Yehuda and friends decided to speak Hebrew exclusively. The experience convinced him that Hebrew should be the spoken language of Jews, as well as a language of prayer. He devoted the entirety of his life to this idea. He was attacked by those who thought he was desecrating the holy tongue. However, he continued inventing words for the dialect since much had transpired since Hebrew was an active language in the earth. He was able to garner the support of educators who were enthusiastic Jewish nationalists to move this vision forward. He brought up his own son speaking entirely Hebrew to prove the Jewish nation should be able to use it in everyday life. Because of his tireless devotion, a majority of the Jews in the land listed Hebrew as their native tongue as early as 1922. The revival of the language closely resembles the miraculous account of Jewish restoration to the land of Israel in our time.
Welcome back, everybody. Kevin Howard brings us important insight into the history of the land of Israel from Rabbi Yehuda Glick, who recently spoke at the Christian Friends of Israel Conference in Jerusalem.
Thanks, Earl. This year's Christian Friends of Israel Conference in Jerusalem, entitled Celebrating the Revelation, was held during Shavuot, also known as Pentecost. As you mentioned, Rabbi Yehuda Glick, the founder of the Shalom Jerusalem Foundation, addressed an international audience gathered together in Jerusalem. Here's part of his very informative message concerning Israel's biblical land covenant.
Wow, Shalom. So great to be here and speak to you. I will fill in two details, what Kevin just said. He said that on October 2014, I survived an assassination attempt. He didn't tell you where the assassination attempt took place. Did anybody know? Right here, in the Begin Center. We had concluded a lecture. Place was full from A to Z. We had 300 people here, and we were at the end of the event at 10 p.m. As I walked out at the door of the building here, there was an attempt to assassinate me. I was critically injured, 4 bullets, point blank. 1 foot away. But after going through 9 different kinds of surgery, 10 days of coma, I checked this morning in Wikipedia, and it says that I am alive. So it really is very moving for me and special for me to speak here at this place. And Kevin said that on January 1st, 2018, my beloved wife passed away. And 4 months ago, I was privileged to remarry Hadass, who was a widow herself for 17 years, raised her 4 children by herself. On the way, she established Israel's national only organization for orphans and widows called Amitzim, the Brave, which is an acronym of Almanot Yetomim Tzirim, young widows and orphans. And I'm privileged to be married to her. With no further more introduction, I will go directly to opening a very wonderful book. You may have heard of it. Strongly recommended book. It's called The Bible. It was written thousands of years ago, and it surprisingly talks even about this week. Shavuot, celebrating the revelation. I understand that you've been studying and understanding what it means, Shavuot, as the day of receiving of the Torah. But I want to go back and try to understand the origin and the deep understanding of what Shavuot is all about. So those of you who have the book are welcome to open it. Those of you who don't can open your smartphone and look for it. Those of you who don't and know the word by heart is even better. I will be reading a few sentences from the book of Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23 talks about the various different festivals. It begins with the holiday of Matzot, the holiday of Passover. It then goes on, and I'm skipping the center part where we'll talk about in a second. It goes on to the beginning of the first day of the seventh month, and then they hit the Day of Atonement, and the holiday of Sukkot, the holiday of Tabernacles. In the midst of the whole thing, the longest part of the chapter talks about the Omer. What is the story of the Omer? What is the story of the Omer? And I'm going to read it carefully with you. I'm reading in the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, verse 9 and on. And the Lord spoke to Moses, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you are to come to the land which I give to you, you shall reap its harvest. Then you shall bring an omer of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And he shall wave the omer before the Lord to be accepted for you." So we're talking about when you begin the harvest. When you begin reaping the harvest, the first, very first grains, the omer, you bring. From then on, you count 50 days. I'm reading verse 15. "And you shall count for yourself from the morrow of the Sabbath, from the day you brought the omer of the wave offering, 7 complete Sabbaths, and then on the tomorrow of the seventh Sabbath, you shall number 50 days. And what you do on that day, you shall bring from your habitation 2 loaves of bread, 10 measures. They will be of fine flour." So you count 50 days, and the 50th day you bring bread. So what are you doing? On the first day you bring the first barley. On the 50th day you bring bread. What is the concept of this? And the 50th day, this is the 50th day, and it's called on verse 21. And verse 21 says, "And you shall proclaim on this very same day that it may be a holy gathering to you. You shall do servile work. It shall be established forever in all dwellings throughout the generations." Meaning, on the 50th day, you bring bread. So you begin on the first day, you bring barley. On the 50th day, you bring bread. And this is the Shavuot. The day of Shavuot, you bring bread. What is the concept of this whole thing? It's very important to understand. The Omer we bring when we begin our work in the field. As a matter of fact, the Omer, the first day when we bring the Omer was the first day in the book of Joshua when we crossed the river and the manna, which had fallen from heaven for 40 years, stopped falling. And then we were coming into Israel and we get the grain of the land of Israel. What happens then? Very often, when you get bread from heaven, you understand it's coming from heaven. But when your bread comes from the earth, you plant and you water it and you plow until you reach and finally you reap it, you get the feeling that it's yours. Comes God and says, I want you to remember that the bringing of the food that you get from the land is also from heaven. How do you do that? On the first day, you bring the barley. When you start the reaping, when you conclude and you have the bread, you bring the first bread. And this will help you remember that actually the bread from the earth is just like the bread from heaven. It comes from the same origin. In the desert, we received two things from heaven. Bread from heaven and Torah from heaven. And those things combine each other. Because if you don't have flour, you don't have Torah. And if you don't have Torah, you don't have flour. And if you don't remember where the origin of your bread is from, you will forget. Where does all this begin? It begins way before that. Where is the first time bread is mentioned in the book? We'll take you back to a very famous story you may have heard of in the book of Genesis. After Adam and Eve eat from the bread from the tree. By the way, you know what Adam's major sin was? God asked him, what did you do? What did God expect him to answer? God expected him to answer, listen, God, please, punish me as much as you want, but please don't touch my wife. If he would have said that, immediately God would have forgiven him for the sins. Instead, what did he do? He blamed her. Ever since then, we men have gone in the footsteps of Adam and we're always blaming her. But God punished us and he told us. I'm reading in the book of Genesis, chapter 3, verse 17. And to man he said, because you have hearkened to the voice of thy wife and you have eaten from the tree I commanded you, saying you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow you shall eat all of the days of your life. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth to you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face shall you eat bread. Before Adam ate from the tree, Adam was living in God's living room, in the Garden of Eden. Adam was feeling God's presence at all times. He was supposed to feel God in every single step he's in. He was supposed to experience God every time he ate something. As a matter of fact, our scholars teach us, you know what the tree that he ate from was? Well, I know that the famous one is the apple. But actually, our scholars tell us it was a wheat tree. Or actually, the fruits of the tree were loaves of bread. I don't know if they were whole wheat or white flour, or I'm not sure which ones. But the tree was a tree of bread.
As Christians around the world continue to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, it's very important to remember to also pray for the entire nation of Israel and the biblical promises God has made. Right now, though, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a wonderful outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a real difference in the lives of many people in the land of Israel today.
Amalek is a single mother living in Jerusalem. As a Jewish immigrant, the burden of a new life in a new country with new language are often too much for some to handle. Like many Ethiopian mothers in Israel, Amalek is facing the hardship of raising her children alone after her husband left her and returned to Ethiopia. Normally, the older children of the family help make ends meet by finding work, but two of Amalek's sons are now away from home, serving as soldiers in Israel Defense Forces. Hi, I'm Marcia Brunson, coordinator for CFI Jerusalem's project, Hope for the Future. Just like Amalek, many women in Israel are unable to survive with their small income alone. Hope for the Future is able to alleviate excess pressure by helping with groceries, paying utility bills, and assisting with the younger children's school tuition fees. I have literally seen people weep with gratitude because they saw no way out of their situation but God. That's when Hope for the Future comes alongside to help. We can't take care of everything, but when it involves the lives of widows or young children, we must respond. Together, we are making a real difference in Israel, one family at a time.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, Hope for the Future. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's return to Rabbi Yehuda Glick's insightful message about Israel's biblical land covenant, which he delivered at this year's CFI conference to an international audience gathered in Jerusalem for a Shavuot celebration.
But how will you reach back to the Garden of Eden if you remember that everything you have is a present from God? And then if we go back to Leviticus chapter 23, we can see that the final sentence describing the holiday of Shavuot is a sentence which sort of has no connection to Shavuot, but let's listen to what it says here. And when you reap your harvest of your land, you shall not altogether remove the corners of the fields. You shall gather any gleaning of the harvest. You shall leave it for the poor and for the stranger. Meaning, how do you remember that everything you have is a present of God? So we said at first you bring the first grain to God. Then you bring the final bread to God. But also you remember and you leave the corners of the fields for those who are in need, for the poor, for the stranger. And that way you show that you're not everything feeling that everything is yours. It's a present of God. And when we live like this, we live with God's presence at all time. And that is the difference between living in the desert as a nation who is on her way to her homeland, compared to living in Israel, compared to living in your homeland, and understanding how your connection to the land is to the land of God. But, and here is the most important thing, the blessing that God gave to our patriarchs was a blessing not only for the people of Israel. It was a blessing, God says, through you will be a blessing to all the nations of the world. So the blessing and the achievements that Israel has achieved in the 70 years of our existence are not a blessing for us. 70 years, we worked hard. We sweated to reach the bread, to reach the achievements, to turn seawater into drinking water. 70 years, we developed this deserted land and we turned into a land of growing. But if we leave all it for ourselves, it will be as if we believe the bread we take is only ours. But if we understand that the blessing we receive is a blessing for the entire world, then we understand the meaning of the concept of God choosing the people of Israel to be a blessing to the other nations. And when God promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that they will be blessed, to each one of them, he says, and through you, I will bless all the families of the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in such incredible times. We are living in a biblical era. You know why it's a biblical era? Because Kevin mentioned before that I'm a tour guide. It's true. But if you would come here 1,000 years ago and you'd call and hire me as your tour guide, I would have been a little skinnier and a little younger. I would have taken you around the country and showed you this country and said, look, this is where Abraham lived. This is where King David was. This is where the tabernacle of Shiloh stood. This is where Jacob laid and dreamt the dream of the ladder. This over here is where Samson was. This over here is where Jeremiah was. But that was 1,000 years ago. Had you hired me this time, I would tell you, look, this time we're going to take the book. We're not going to walk in the footsteps of what was. We'll walk in the footsteps of what's happening today. We will see page after page how the prophets are materializing and becoming a reality in front of our eyes. We will see. Anybody have a smartphone? I don't know if he goes by WhatsApp or by SMS or by Instagram, but if you can please do me a favor and send Ezekiel a message. Write to him, Ezekiel, the bones ain't dry anymore. Try to send one to Jeremiah. Tell him, Jerusalem is not isolated like a widow anymore. You know, very often we have the privilege of standing and waiting in traffic jams. You ever heard of that? So once in a while, I stand in traffic jams on the way to Jerusalem. And you know what I do? I open the book of Lamentations. And I read, it says, Darchei Tzion Avilot. The ways of Zion are mourning because nobody comes to the solemn assembly. Ki ba'e moed, kol she'areha shomimim, all of its gates are desolated. And then I look and I say, God, wow, thank you for the traffic jams to Jerusalem. It's such a blessing because the alternative is that nobody is here. And you can tell Zechariah, Zachy, children are playing in the streets of Jerusalem. It's happening because Isaiah told us that all the nations are going to come to Jerusalem to call in the name of one God. I am sure when Isaiah concluded that speech, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you recall that Isaiah was there way before Jesus, meaning in his time, all the nations were idol worshippers. So how could he believe that all the nations will be calling in the name of one God? When Isaiah was living here, Jerusalem was a tiny little village. How could all the nations come here? But above all, did you know that in the time of Isaiah, there were no airplanes, there were no trains, there were no superhighways, there were no tunnels, there were no bridges? So how could all nations come to Jerusalem? Because when God decided that the time had come, he made sure the Wright brothers invented the airplanes so that people could come to Israel. And this is the concept of the blessings that God gave to the people of Israel. That the blessings of us should be a blessing to all nations. So now we see Jerusalem is a big city, 1 million inhabitants. Now we see that all the nations are becoming worshipers of one God. That there is transportation. Now we see that there is communication. There's media. We can talk and be seen and watch what's going on all over the world. And now we can understand how the covenant between God and his people to be blessing entire people. And now it's understandable. A beautiful thing I thought about a few days ago. I shared it with the people I just spoke with in the Knesset. They're here for a prayer breakfast from 65 different countries. And I'll share it with you as well. There's a famous sentence in the book of Psalms 122. It says, we know, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, right? Everybody knows that sentence? You've heard of it? Guys, that's not what it says there. It does not say, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. I'm reading in the book of Psalms, chapter 122. I'm happy when I was glad when they said to me, let's go to the house of the Lord when our feet stood at the gates of Jerusalem. Sha'alu shalom Yerushalayim is always translated as pray for the peace of Jerusalem. It's not what it says. First of all, sha'alu is not pray. Sha'alu is request. Yerushalayim in that sentence is not a noun. It's an adjective. Request peace. What kind of peace? Jerusalemite peace. Listen carefully. You know what Jerusalemite peace is? Sometimes we think peace is a political issue. Sign a contract. Sometimes we think peace is diplomacy. Peace is adding God's name to the world. God's name is Shalom. Pray for a Jerusalemite peace, that Jerusalem should be a house of prayer for all nations. Pray for a peace that all nations are part of it. Pray for a universal peace. That's the peace you should pray for. We don't only want peace here in Jerusalem. We want peace in the entire world. So when we say Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim, request peace Jerusalem, we don't want peace only for Jerusalem. From Jerusalem, we want the blessing to the entire world. Ask for a Jerusalemite peace. Isn't that beautiful?
Thanks, Kevin, for that very enlightening message from Rabbi Yehuda Glick concerning the biblical land covenant God revealed to Abraham and its relevance to the nation of Israel even today. Well, our time is almost up this week, but before we go, let's take another look at the CFI Jerusalem News Desk and Front Page Jerusalem's David Milburn.
Thanks again, Earl. A new campsite is being created in the Peace Forest in Jerusalem to combat the high cost of hotels in the city. Scheduled to open in October 2020, it would be the first camping site in the capital and would be located within walking distance from the First Station compound, the Hinnom Valley, the City of David, the Western Wall, and the Old City. The camping site is expected to have accommodation for up to 200 people and is meant to help ease the load of other hotels in the city. The Peace Forest has recently been undergoing ecological restoration and added infrastructure work in order to make it easier for the general public and the expected increased number of tourists who will arrive in the area.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody. And don't forget to continue praying for the peace of Jerusalem and all of those in Israel and in the Middle East. And let me invite you to join us again next week as we bring you the latest from Israel and the Middle East. And please, please, don't forget to support this station because it supports Israel. So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel, Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media, Incorporated.